Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You are listening to It's All About Food, my favorite subject. Thanks for being here and listening. And guess what? I've got my favorite guest here with me today, Gary DeMattei. In fact, it's not even like you're a guest anymore, Gary. It's just like you're a team member. So thanks for joining me.
Of course.
And being a part of the It's All About Food team.
It's my pleasure. I love it here. I love it on It's All About Food because my favorite subject is food, too.
It is.
Yeah. Healthy, delicious, nutritious, plant-based food and or vegan food.
Yeah, we like food.
And hey, you know what? We're going to do part two of The Vegan Artist's Way today. That's why I'm back, because we had so many wonderful things to talk about last week and we didn't get to them all.
Are you a vegan artist?
I am. I'm a vegan actor.
So am I.
Are you?
I am.
Yeah. All right. I guess you could say I'm a vegan artist. Sure.
Yes, you are a vegan artist.
Or an artist vegan. Or an artisan vegan.
Artisan vegan. That's good too. Yeah. It's all about art.
Do you know what vegan artists eat? Vegan meatloaf. Wasn't that great?
Yeah, you know.
We had a great dinner. Vegan meatloaf with mashed potatoes. It was comfort food.
It was, and peas and carrots.
And peas and carrots.
And Gary made it all, and he cut those carrots into little squares.
Right, I did. Yeah. And I rolled the peas. I made the peas myself, too. No, I didn't make the peas.
So, Gary, this meatloaf that you made us, and we had it yesterday.
It was great.
It was great. But you know what? It's one of our Veganuary recipes for January.
Right.
And we made it in February.
Well, that's why I'm back on It's All About Food, because we have so much to talk about. All of the Veganuary food. But I think Veganuary dishes can easily go into February, don't you?
Easily. In fact, that meatloaf, we made it in the summer once.
Oh, yeah.
And it was great then, too.
Yeah, and we both said the same thing when we were eating Sunday dinner yesterday. We said, well, not yesterday, excuse me, the day before yesterday. Wow. On Sunday. Anyway, we said, we can't wait to make meatloaf sandwiches.
Who remembers meatloaf sandwiches? I do.
Only our meatloaf isn't meatloaf. It's grain loaf.
Yeah.
It's made with three different kinds of rice and millet. It's made with black rice. It's made with red rice. It's made with brown rice. And it's made with millet. And we used to make it with
Taranakum, which some people call kamut.
Right.
Which is a wheat grain.
Right.
So it has gluten in it. And it's nice. It's just we don't see it around all the time. And
well, what it is it's really chewy.
Yeah.
It gives you that chew. So if you want that gristle.
Yeah.
That gristle feeling, you can make it with kamut.
Or taranakum. I think taranakum is more fun to say. But they're both fun to say.
Yeah.
Kamut.
Taranakum.
Taranakum. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. So I apologize if I am not to all of you taranakum enthusiasts.
Lovers out there.
Yes. But this,
not to be confused with taranakumin, which is a, I don't know what it is. Or yes. Turmeric.
Right. Cumin. Is that like a cross between cumin and turmeric?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Tumeric. Do you say cumin or cumin?
You say cumin and I say cumin.
Yeah. Who says cumin? I know some people do.
I don't. I don't say it that way.
I don't
way.
Either. But if you say cumin, we can still be friends because it's still a great spice no matter what you call it.
Right. And just don't say, well, I won't go there. Anyway, there's another way you can pronounce C-U-M-I-N, but we won't go there.
Oh, no, Gary.
Well, I said I wasn't going to go there. Okay?
Okay, I never
It's a family show.
I'm never going to think of cumin the same again.
That's a song if I've ever heard one. I'm never going to think of cumin the same again. Okay. Anyway,
okay.
This
can
meatloaf
we, do you
can
think
be,
we can get through this program?
Yes.
I'm just going to laugh the whole way through.
This meatloaf recipe, this grain loaf recipe, is at Responsible Eating and Living.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
That's one of my favorite websites.
Yes, you can get this recipe. And also, it makes a great burger.
Let me ask you one question.
Really great burger.
Is this a difficult recipe?
No, you just have to, well, you know.
Are there a lot of steps involved?
I mean, not really. There's a lot of spices. And there's there's wet ingredients and dry ingredients, just like anything else. I mean, what do you do when you make any kind of a loaf? A grain nut loaf.
You put it all together in a bowl. Yeah, you add the spices and you put it in a pan.
Yeah.
And you bake it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But you know what? I've been accused of having very difficult recipes, so I will say that if you don't like to cook, if you don't like to be in the kitchen, if you don't like to mix things up, I mean, it's no more difficult than making a cake from scratch.
Okay.
Do you like making a cake?
Well, let's talk about this for a minute. Do I like making a cake? Yes and no. I mean, making a cake from an artist's point of view because I like painting and playing with my hands and working with goops and things. But I don't necessarily have to eat it because I'm not really into refined flours and sugars. But I love making cake.
Such a great segue because I think we're having this part two of the vegan artist's way. And I think any art is a process, right? And the creative process, I don't find any better creative process or better example of the creative process than cooking.
Hmm.
It's the greatest example of the creative process. You and I saw an exhibition at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts. Yes?
Yes.
And we saw that. It was in your blog. And your blog is great, by the way.
Thank you, Gary.
Yes, everybody needs to write in and tell Karen to keep up the blog because she's...
I plan on ending it on February 10th.
Plans on ending it on February 10th, and I say...
It will be 5 years, and I have a book to finish, and I'm going to take that blog writing time and finish my book.
And then I'm going to keep the blog going, everybody. So write in and tell Karen how wonderful you think her blog is, and write in and encourage me to keep it going while she's finishing her book. And we'll talk about the book in a little bit. But in keeping with the subject of the vegan artist's way and how my example of the creative process, there's no better example than cooking. When we went to the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts last week, we saw the Harold Prince exhibition. It's free. And if you're in New York or the New York area or wherever you are, try to get out here and see this. It's a real... If you're fans of Harold Prince and all of the plays and musicals that he had a part in as either director or producer or both, if you know Fiddler on the Roof, if you know Cabaret, if you know Phantom of the Opera, let's just name those three. Those are Harold Prince productions and so many others. Anyway... He made it a point, and the people who put the exhibition together made it a point, to talk about the creative process and collaboration being the key to his genius. And all of these incredible works that he did, he made it a point to let everyone know that it's because he collaborates and believes in the creative process and the collaborative process. So cooking, to me, is a very, very great example of the creative process. And what you're collaborating with is all of the ingredients.
Mm. And think about all the people who brought those ingredients to you. That's always like...
That's exactly right.
A great exercise to do when you're eating or making food. Think about where everything came from. There were so many steps with the food being grown, the farmers, the workers... being packaged, being processed.
Yes.
There's just so many steps going to the store. So many hands.
Yes.
Touched.
You got it. And that's what I meant by the creative process. We don't see those collaborators, but they're there. And we were having this discussion earlier, and I thought this would be a great thing to talk about on your show. It's an act of collaboration and cooperation, right? And we take it for granted, of course, because that's what people do. But when you're cooking, a way to really make it a wonderful experience, not just a lot of people don't like to cook, And I have a problem with cooking sometimes. But when you think about how your food got to where it got, and I know you say this on your program all of the time, who picked the vegetables, who, you know, shipped them to the store, how long did it take? It's really an important thing to keep in mind. It's also very meditative. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm. I find it zen-like.
Right.
Especially if I'm alone and I'm cooking and chopping. I find it a very peaceful experience. Now, some people may not find it peaceful because they may have just gotten home from work and they're tired and they have children who are hungry and whining and everybody wants to get fed. And so there's that part of it that makes it a little less zen-like.
Right.
But one of the things in terms of it being an artistic endeavor, I like it the best because you get the results right away.
Exactly.
You know, we go to all of these auditions and most of them we don't even hear anything back. You don't get any feedback.
Right.
But when you make food, you get instant feedback.
You do. Culinary art. That's basically, it's one of the arts. And so when we say we're artists, we could clearly be culinary artists as well as performing artists. And cooking is I told you this when I was making dinner on Sunday. I said, if I had one of those Fitbits on, I would have probably had like 300,000 steps because it's a workout, but it's a great workout. And when it's really cold outside, it's the best way for me to work out because then afterwards I have something to sit down and enjoy after my workout.
Yes.
So is it difficult to make this grain loaf, this thing that we call meatloaf? Well, no, I don't think so. Someone else might think so, mm-hmm. but I don't think so. Why don't you make it out there and then let us know.
Yeah.
Let us know. And
well, let me confess here. You came up with this blend a long time mm-hmm. ago when we made the Healthy World Burger.
Which this is, basically, the Healthy World
Burger. So the Healthy World Burger, the base is made from brown rice, red rice, black rice. And we used terranicum and millet.
And millet.
But we used the terranicum instead of the brown rice. It was red rice, black rice, millet, and terranicum originally. And then to make it gluten-free, we used brown rice instead of terranicum. Okay. Kamut.
I remember it as being the millet that we replaced, but okay.
And it's a great blend, and we make it all the time, just as a grain dish.
Right. That's our favorite grain dish.
When we first published this hamburger recipe, this Healthy World Burger recipe, and I probably should go back and revise it, we had cooked each grain separately.
Right.
We had a pot for millet, a pot for the... We combined the red and black rice and the terranicum. We cooked them all separately. You can cook them all together. I mean, that's the first step.
Oh, yeah.
To simplify.
Do we have that on the recipe that you cook them separately?
We do.
Oh, yeah. We have to change that right
away.
Yeah.
Well, I thought originally I was looking for textures and colors, and I wanted to keep everything separate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fine to cook them all together.
Yeah. I mean, we've made a lot of different burgers and loaves. We've made a lentil burger. Remember our barbecue special
that you love so much about
mm-hmm. the black and white takeoff on...
Lucy, I love Lucy.
Yeah. That's a lentil burger. That worked. We haven't made that in a long time. We should revisit all of our recipes because I'm sure we'll find ways to
simplify. Well, speaking of revisiting recipes,
yes.
Let's go to the next one, which is the breakfast that I made for you.
Right.
And I made a recipe you had made a few years ago called the gooey apricot Danish.
Right.
And I've been thinking about that ever since we made it 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, there was a bakery, or it's still there. I think it's actually expanded. But in the 90s, I believe, in Berkeley, California, Acme Bread Company, Acme Bakery, used to have these apricot sweet rolls. And they weren't sugar sweet. They were sweetened naturally with the apricots, and people would wait in line outside of Acme Bakery, and that I'd wait in line and go in and get like 6 or 7 of these apricot things. And so one day here at home, fast forward to the 2000s, I wanted the apricot sweet roll from Acme, And so I recreated the recipe here, but I made it gluten-free. And the one in Berkeley wasn't gluten-free. It was the real deal. And, well, this is the real deal, too, because Responsible Eating and Living made it. But my point is, it came out pretty close, and then you made it the other day for breakfast. That was Saturday morning, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's on your blog, too.
Yeah. And it's a great recipe. And I just revised it. So
right.
I'm always working on revising or simplifying whatever we can do. So if you've seen a recipe on our website and you thought it was crazy complicated, maybe you should go back and see it again. Maybe I've tightened it up a bit.
Right. But I'm okay with it being a little complicated. And I'm all right with that. But if someone else isn't, write us. Let us know, just like you said. And we'll try and give you an easier way to do it because – or make up your own way.
Exactly.
This is just a suggestion for you. Chemistry, I guess baking is a chemistry. At least that's what my teachers told me in baking school. And cooking is more of a throw a little bit of this in or try a little bit of that. But
so let me give you an example. For this recipe, the gooey apricot Danish, which I really recommend you make because I think it's fabulous. And it, as Gary said, it's not sweet. The pastry part of it, the dough part of it, it's like bread.
It's like a bread. Right. It's like
and
bread
then it has the gooey, sweet apricot, which is not overly sweet because we don't put sugar in it.
Right.
Just the fruit.
You would be fine feeding this to your child. You know? Because
yes.
A lot of people don't want to have
their kids have
sugar.
But let me talk about the flours. So when I first made this, I don't know what I was thinking, but I used to have lots of different gluten-free flours in the house, rice and sorghum, what else did I, millet, oat, and then all-purpose gluten-free flour. And now I'm working towards not using an all-purpose gluten-free flour, a commercial brand, because they all have starches in them.
Right.
And I'm trying to use just whole grains.
Right.
And my new thing is making the flours here at home. So we have millet, and we have oats, rolled oats and steel-cut oats, and I'll put them in the Vitamix, and it makes flour.
Right.
And that's what I use for breads and baked goods.
You've done that with rice, too, haven't you?
I haven't made rice flour.
Okay.
But I can try. I think rice is a little harder.
It is a little grittier when you...
Yeah,
when you...
but the millet and the oats are pretty soft. So
right.
They flour up really nicely.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, I just like to make the flour myself because I think it's fresher and it doesn't go rancid as easily. You know me and things going rancid.
Well, all of our flours are in the refrigerator. I know you've told folks that before,
yep.
But we keep our flours in glass jars in the refrigerator.
The secret to keeping your food fresh is to... not only keep it in a cool, dry place or in a refrigerator, but to use it.
Yeah, we use it.
Use it. I know people buy a flour for a recipe or something and then just forget about it for 2 years. That's not a good idea.
No.
You want to use the food. Anyway, so I like to make my own millet and oat flour because we have millet. We make it as a grain. We have the oats. We make it as a grain. This way I don't have a bag of flour sitting around.
Right.
I make it when I need it. So some people might think, oh my God, you're going to make the flour first? That's too much trouble. Well, you could buy the flour. That's one step to make it easier.
It's really not too much trouble.
That's not too much trouble to make it if you have a high-powered blender.
Well, maybe it is too much trouble, but we're going to be making it as long as we can because it's...
I just think it's better.
It's wonderful... It's wonderful, and it tastes so incredible. And these were better than mine, yours, the apricot gooey.
Mm-hmm.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
And the point of this was you're going to tell everybody that you updated
the recipe. I updated the recipe,
right.
Yeah.
And it had some, it's a process, right? Every time we make a recipe, we find that, oh, maybe if we add a little bit of this or a little bit of that. So our recipes are also evolving like we are.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So one of my other goals is to go through most of our recipes, and the ones that have sugar, evaporated cane juice, maybe I can change that to a date paste.
And speaking of date paste, you've been making date paste lately, and it's...
It's crack.
It's fabulous. No, it's fabulous. I put a little bit in my cup, and I pour my tea into it. I feel so Russian. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where's the samovar? You know?
Where is our samovar?
I know. Yeah, seriously, I feel like we're in a Chekhov play.
Okay, who knows what a samovar is? And who knows where to find them? Because a few years ago, I was looking to get us a samovar, and I couldn't find... I found some that were really junky.
Well, we found a nice one in Saratoga, California.
Oh,
remember that?
Was it like thousands of dollars?
No, I don't think it was that much, but we just couldn't schlep it home.
Right.
Right, but it was electric. It wasn't the kind where you put the coal from the fire in.
Yes. Well, a samovar is a big, what would you call it? A big canister.
Well, it's a thing to keep water constantly hot. And
it has a place to put a teapot on,
right on top.
On top.
Yeah. It's a boiler, basically, is what it
is. Yeah.
And I'll get you the exact definition
of a samovar.
Right now. A highly decorated tea urn used in Russia. It's an urn. Hmm. Yeah. And they're decorative. They're really cool.
We don't really have room for it.
It has a spigot for the hot water on the bottom, and you take the teapot off the top and you pour the water and you just keep the tea going all day. It's something that keeps the tea going all day.
Right.
Yeah. And we drink a lot of tea, but we have Angie.
We have Angie.
Right. Why don't you tell them the Angie story?
Angie is the name I gave our Breville tea maker.
Right.
And I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. It's an appliance that I coveted for a long time, but it was expensive, and I didn't think that I needed an extra appliance for that amount of money. And then my cousin in Florida,
Jeffrey,
he had lost his wife, Angie, unfortunately, way, way too young, and she had purchase one of these Breville tea makers, and I was helping him out with some nutrition information.
And nutritious.
And he sent me her Breville tea maker. So we call it Angie in her memory.
Right.
And we use it like a gazillion times a day.
Right. It not only makes tea, but it makes tea with such style.
Well, you can set the temperature of where you want the water to be,
yeah,
how hot it is, because a black tea requires a hotter temperature, green tea a little not so hot. If you're a tea sommelier.
If you're a tea snob.
And it's fun.
Breville should actually be listening to this show, because we're plugging them and they're not even a sponsor.
No, we're not getting anything from them.
No. But thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's our sommelier. We actually have the Breville sommelier.
That's our samovar.
Samovar, sorry. That's our samovar.
That would be a great character name.
It is.
Samovar sommelier.
Samovar the lawyer is a Groucho Marx
yes.
character.
Samovar the lawyer.
Exactly. That's why I love you so much, because you're a fan of the Marx Brothers.
Oh.
So anyway, so the apricot gooey sticky rolls are also on our website.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it back up to the homepage because it's buried deep.
And we had a lot of great food this past week. We had some really wonderful stuff. You made a borscht. Really, it was delicious.
Yeah, I don't make borscht a lot. But when I do, I'm happy to have it.
In honor of the vegan artist's way, the borscht belt.
Right? Ba-dum-bum.
Right?
Yes, the borscht belt was in the Catskills. You know, there used to be all of these resorts to go to in the Catskills. And I remember as a kid, sometimes we would go in the summer to one of these places.
Right.
And it was a fun thing to do. There would be some counselors that would have activities for the kids, but the big event was eating.
Right.
We would get dressed for breakfast, and we would stuff our faces for breakfast, and then I don't know what happened, but then it was time for lunch.
As soon as breakfast was over?
And then it was time for dinner.
Right.
it was really way too much eating, but that was one of the highlights. And then there would be a show at night.
Right.
And there were a lot of Jewish comedians that would perform in these shows. And so it was dubbed the Borscht Belt.
Right. No, I remember. And it's still, I mean, there were, well, I don't know if it's still, I don't know if there are still shows in that, in the Catskills. But I remember when I was here in New York in the early 1980s, there were still shows going on in the Catskills.
Yeah.
We actually saw Chita Rivera.
Wow.
At a place called Tenement. The late Augie Amato and I. Because Augie and Chita worked together.
Well, what I like to put in borscht, traditionally what you put in borscht, you could put a boiled potato, you can put a plop of sour cream. And we make yogurt at home.
Can we talk about that yogurt after we talk about your borscht? Because
absolutely.
Yogurt is amazing.
Yeah, that's another recipe that keeps getting zhuzhed.
Yeah, evolving. It's just...
But borscht is basically beets cooked in water. And you can add whatever you want to it. I like to add dill. You can add onions, carrots, celery. You can add cabbage.
And what did your mother say to do? You chopped up the potatoes.
I did. My mother likes the whole boiled. She likes to
put the whole potato
in. You boil a potato separate.
And then you put it
in the borscht.
Right.
Traditions.
I've never had borscht until I met you. Right?
And you were like afraid to try it.
I didn't know what it was going to do to my, you know.
It turns your pee red.
Exactly. Exactly.
So be warned.
But you know what? I had Karen's borscht, and I want to tell you, you can't beat it.
Oh, ba-dump. And you know what? I have not put a borscht recipe on the website.
Well, you better, because I'm telling you, you
can't beat it. Ba-dump-bump. Okay, now let's move to yogurt.
Okay, so let us know about this yogurt, because with the date paste, it's a dessert. Okay?
Yes.
It's amazing.
Okay, so I highly recommend making your own yogurt. And you can make yogurt with any plant milk. Soy milk, oat milk, you know what I'm talking
coconut
about.
Coconut milk.
There's
a lot of coconut-based yogurts out there.
Now, a lot, if you make yogurt with just a milk, it will probably be too thin.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to add in something to make it thicker.
Right.
Now, some people might add a blended nut to their soy milk. Some people add dry soy milk powder to their soy milk to make it thicker.
And there's a lot of yogurt recipes out there, but this...
Yes, and then what I was... Okay, recipe. So what I did next was I was making a lot of almond yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, people will say it takes too much time the way I do it, which is I take a raw almond, I soak my raw almonds overnight, and then I slip the skins off of them, and people
slip
will
off
go,
really
what?
Easy.
You
That's
slip
such
the skins
a fun
off.
Activity for the kids. Here, slip some skins off
slip
of these.
Slip the skins off. It doesn't take long.
Get the kids around the table. Put a big piece of news. Do people even get newspapers anymore?
Yeah, I don't know.
Put newspapers out and have the kids slip off the skins of the almond.
Sure. I think it's very relaxing. And so then once that's done, I can blend the almonds with water. And I do the same thing with cashews. I'll blend cashews with water, soaked cashews.
After you soak them overnight.
But the secret is...
Raw.
Of course, raw. But how much water you add.
Mm-hmm.
So if you add too much water, it'll be too thin. If you don't add enough water, it'll be too thick. And you might find a thickness that you like best.
Right.
So I was adding a certain amount of water and with the almonds. And then I started making cashew yogurt. And it was... One day it seemed to be just right, and then another day it seemed to be a little too thin.
Again, it's a process.
And this time I intentionally made it very thick.
Right.
And that's the way Gary likes it.
Well, it was great.
Yes. It was almost like a farmer's cheese or something. It's thick.
Right. And when you add the date paste to it, it's like cheesecake.
Yeah. So we don't eat a bigger volume. We eat a smaller volume because it's rich
it's
and dense.
So small.
Like but
little,
very yummy
a bit
to
goes
have.
A long way. We've been getting into bowls lately too. You know this bowl concept. You go to a lot of restaurants, which is also in your blog.
Yes.
That you're stopping soon.
I am.
It's just a plethora of information. I can't understand why you want to stop it. That's why I'm going to keep it going.
Okay, good.
But a lot of these restaurants, especially plant-based
restaurants. Bowls are trending.
Bowls are trending. And what is a bowl? Okay, you put a bed of greens. You get a nice big bowl. And you get some greens and you put it on the bottom. And then you just put a bunch of toppings on it. It's like a salad sundae.
So you get grains, your whole grain. You get right. some beans maybe. The beans might be flavored or not.
Maybe some guacamole if you want to do
guacamole is always good.
A Mexican bowl, if you want to do an Asian bowl, if you want to do an Italian bowl, whatever. It's like you're putting...
And then our yogurt.
And a little dab of the yogurt on any bowl is fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we've had some bowls this week. And I made a wonderful frittata. We have all of these recipes up at the Responsible Eating and Living website. My frittata is in a cookbook, actually. It's in the Farm Sanctuary.
Farm Sanctuary cookbook.
But you can go here and get it. And we have actually several different frittata recipes. But I recommend buying the Farm Sanctuary cookbook. They do some nice work at Farm Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And that's why we donated recipes to them.
That's right. And buy the Eat for the Planet cookbook. We've got even more recipes in that one. And one day... we'll put out our own cookbook.
And we have it, right? We're ready to go.
Yes.
Yeah, we're just going to put it together and get it photographed and test the recipes.
And testing these recipes again.
So that's why we're talking a lot about testing these recipes, because we are actually putting together our own cookbook. And it's been a... 2011 is when we launched Responsible Eating and Living, so it should be out for our 10-year anniversary.
That's a good idea.
Right?
Yeah.
2021.
That's a good idea.
If we're all still here. Because let's talk about what's going on in the vegan news.
Okay. Vegan news.
So I read some really interesting things about the ag gag law in Kansas. The oldest ag gag law in the U.S. was ruled unconstitutional.
Wow.
Yeah. That was pretty exciting. Everybody knows what the term ag gag refers to, right? It means that they will gag, tell you you can't mention what's going on in the agricultural industry. In other words, let's say you're an employee of a slaughterhouse and you want to tell folks about the cruelty that's going on in that slaughterhouse. It's self-explanatory, but let's say, as with this one, they were smashing poor little piggies' heads against the concrete, and someone would want to report that. So what an ag gag law said was that you will get thrown in jail if you do anything to jeopardize...
If you speak out about cruelty in animal agriculture.
Right.
And you're punished, period.
And there was... I mean, and a lot of people have gone to jail for being what they call whistleblowers. Well, the oldest ag gag law in the U.S. has been ruled unconstitutional and goes against the First Amendment. So while we still have a constitution, that's a good thing, right?
While we still have one.
Well, there's been some debate on whether or not we're still a democracy.
The Animal Legal Defense Fund has worked quite a bit to fight against these ag gag laws.
Yeah, and who is the Animal League Defense Fund?
The ALDF, established in 1979. I've talked to some people on this show about the Animal Legal Defense Fund, but they focus on a lot of different issues. Another one they work on is puppy mills.
Yeah, let's talk about puppy mills. Does everybody out there know what a puppy mill is? It's a place where puppies are bred.
And just like factory farms, they might not be treated very well, especially the moms.
Right, the mommy puppies, the moms of the puppies.
Yes, and the good news is, at least in New York State, as of today, the New York Senate Committee on Domestic Animal Welfare just passed the bill to shut down the puppy mill pipeline. Now, this has to go to the full New York Senate, but this is exciting and some progress.
It's very exciting. And with respect to the ag gag law, there's a lot of states that have tried to put an ag gag law in, and they keep getting shut down. I think there's only a few states that actually yeah. still
the Animal League Defense Fund, the Animal Legal Defense Fund has a nice graphic on their website showing ag gag laws across the country.
Right.
And there are the states, which are probably most of the blue states. On their map, they show them green, where the legislation has been defeated. And then they have other states where it was struck down as unconstitutional. I mean, there are groups in every state that have tried to get these laws passed. But fortunately, they've either been struck down or defeated. And there's only a handful of states where the legislation has passed, and now they're working on getting them struck down. There are lawsuits filed in, I think, 4 or 5 more states that they're working on.
And why don't we want people to know what's going on in a slaughterhouse?
Why don't
these businesses want the public to know how their product is made? Why? He asked ironically.
Yeah, because they're doing things that are illegal. They're doing things that are cruel. And not only are they abusing the animals that are ultimately going to be killed anyway for food.
The ultimate abuse.
But
murder.
There's enough information out there that shows that the human beings who work in those facilities are exploited and abused as well.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of quotes, and I don't know, a lot of people take credit for this quote, but if slaughterhouses had glass walls, nobody would eat meat. Everybody would be vegan.
And you know what? I wish that was true.
Right.
I don't think everybody would be vegan, but maybe less people.
Well, if you saw what was going on in there and you still decided to eat meat, then yeah, you've got a bigger problem than. But they keep that from the public because the public would be horrified if they mm-hmm. knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. But then there's a lot of people that you try and tell this to, and they put up their hand and say,
I don't want to know.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. So the problem exists because we might be the problem.
Oh, we are the problem.
I was trying to be gentle.
Yes, we're the big problem.
Yeah. But anyway, so that was good news.
What about in France?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe the good news in France.
Tell us about it.
Anytime some pro-animal, some anti-animal cruelty thing comes out of France, I'm just tickled. Because when I lived there from 1992 to 1996, I never met another vegan. I might have met one vegetarian, I think, maybe. They were all closeted at the time. And then they came out and had started the Veggie Pride Parade.
In France, right?
In France. But the food culture in France is so connected with cheese and veal and
butter.
Foie gras and butter. And so it's difficult to acknowledge that there's cruelty involved. But there is a strong movement happening there. It's really exciting. And they recently outlawed grinding up male chicks.
Oh.
In the
shredding chickens.
Yes.
Shredding
in the egg laying places. So what happens is when male chicks are born to egg laying hens, they're worthless. So what we do in the United States is we just throw them in a pile and let them suffocate together, or shred them. Like wood chips.
Make them chicken nuggets.
Without any anesthesia or anything. They're just born and just foom.
Born and shredded.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen in France and perhaps other countries.
So they ruled that against the law.
Yeah.
Well,
that's really good news.
Shouldn't it be?
Shouldn't it be?
I'm telling you.
I'm not exactly sure when it takes effect, but I did read that they did rule that.
That's fantastic news. Well, hey, I heard that Whistler, as in Whistler, British Columbia, is getting its first vegan festival.
Oh, when is it? Let's go, everybody.
Yeah, I want to go.
I want to go.
I want to go, too. It's going to be in June in 2020.
June yeah, this, in 2020. Everybody, yeah. Let's meet in Whistler.
Yeah, I think that there's a website here. And let me give you the information on the website. It's called WhistlerVeganFest.com. Check it out. Eat, drink, chat, move, get hooked on plants. June 2020, Whistler, British Columbia. One weekend to get hooked on plants. Get ready to immerse yourself in the plant-based movement as we put out a deliciously fun vibe that inspires, educates, celebrates, entertains, and goes deep into all things vegan. And you get to hang out in Whistler.
You know, I haven't done a count, but there are veg fests and vegan fests popping up everywhere.
Yeah, and when we were at Lincoln Center the other day at the Library for the Performing Arts, that's your old stomping grounds because you were responsible for...
Yes, probably the first. I won't say it's the first, but...
One of the first.
One of the early all-vegan food festivals.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was big, right?
It was big. We did it 5 years in a row. We had about 10,000 people show up every year.
And what were the dates?
2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, and 2006. What was really challenging back then was there were not that many vegan products available.
And now
they're exploding.
They are exploding.
So it's a lot easier to have a vegan fest than it was when I was doing it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of products coming out of California, a lot of these vegan products. And did you hear the news coming out of California? California just got a vegan lobby group.
Yeah.
The California Plant-Based Alliance.
Now, this is exciting.
A vegan Now, what is a lobbyist? A lobbyist is someone that lobbies for your cause in the capital of the state or the nation's capital, right? They go
right
up to people and they...
Well, the really effective ones will whisper in the representatives' ears and make deals with them so that the lobbyists will get legislation that works in their product's favor.
Right.
And there have been lobbyists for a very long time for meat products, for beef and for pork and for dairy and for sugar.
Right.
But there really hasn't been a broccoli lobby.
Right.
Or an apple lobby.
Or a vegetarian lobby.
Yes.
Or a vegan lobby.
Now there's the Plant-Based Foods Association, started a few years ago by Michelle Simon, and they're centered in Washington, D.C., I believe. And I believe they were the first. But more the merrier. We need lots of action.
Right.
To support plants.
Yeah, and California is a big global economy. I think it's like the fifth largest global economy.
Whoa.
And they are also responsible for some of the bigger plant-based products like Miyoko's Creamery and Follow Your Heart and Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. And so this is a good thing coming out of California.
It's a good thing. And we can't say enough about Miyoko either. And she just had a pop-up here in New York to have people sample her new...
Right.
I think it's a cheddar cheese. It melts.
It melts. And she was making and giving away
like
grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yes, grilled cheese sandwiches. She did it in California. And now... She did it
She's
in New York
really,
just
really
a few days ago.
Doing some good stuff. And so that's very exciting coming out of California. And this lobby group is going to protect brands that are plant-based because they're going to be standing in their corner. Because a lot of the people who oppose plant-based products, trying to shut them down and tell them they can't advertise a certain way or they can't put their food on the shelf next to someone else's food that isn't plant-based because somebody might buy it.
Somebody might buy it. Yeah, what really needs to happen is, well, there's so much that needs to happen, but with regards to plants versus animals versus processed food in our government favors the foods that are the least healthy for us.
Right.
And it really should be flipped. So subsidies and tax benefits should go to the healthiest foods, organic plant foods, and none, or maybe even a penalty, should go on the processed, sugary, salty, oily, meaty foods.
Right.
Will we ever see it?
I don't know. I don't know. I hope so.
I hope so.
But let me ask you that same question, because you've been a vegan how many years now?
It's going to be 32 years this 32 August.
32 years. And before that, a vegetarian.
Vegetarian for like another 15 years.
Right. So that's 47 years.
Yes.
And let me ask you, in 47 years, have you seen a lot of change?
Yes. That's a really good question, because it's easy to get exhausted and depressed and frustrated because things aren't the way you want them to be. But then you think back not too long ago, it wasn't as good as it is today.
It wasn't as tasty, that's for sure, right?
That's true. Wasn't as tasty.
What was some of the standard dishes that you would have had 30 plus years ago? A bowl of what?
I ate a lot of pasta.
A lot of pasta?
A lot of pasta.
Yeah.
A lot of pasta with vegetables.
A lot of primavera.
I ate a lot of linguine with garlic and oil.
Ah.
I would never touch that now, but especially when I traveled, like to Germany or somewhere in Europe, that was an easy dish.
Right. I could see that.
Like spaghetti mit Öl und Knoblauch.
That was the German
yes.
version, right?
Mm-hmm.
And spaghetti with olio di oliva e, how do you say garlic? Oh, I'm going to get kicked out of the Italian Union.
Yes.
Aioli.
So my cooking has changed over the decades, absolutely. The kinds of food I eat have changed because we've learned more about nutrition. We have a few more nutritionists, dietitians, and medical doctors who are more aware of the power of plant foods, who are guiding us a little better in terms of what foods are healthy or not. There's been more research on plants. And as all that information comes out, I like to go with it. I want to evolve. I want to do the best that I can. I laugh and think about when I was in college, we thought wheat germ was like the healthy thing. So wheat germ. So I would put wheat germ on everything.
Right.
And
wheat grass was supposed to be the big...
Well, wheat grass is still pretty healthy.
Still pretty popular, too.
But the reason why I don't really go for wheat grass is because I went to the Ann Wigmore Institute in Puerto Rico. And I'm not putting down Ann Wigmore's Institute.
It's a
wonderful place. But because it's so warm there, they grow wheat grass at the facility. And it can get a little moldy at the soil level.
Mm-hmm.
So they would always say, cut it above a certain level so you wouldn't get the mold.
Right.
But I taste mold in wheatgrass now whenever I try
right,
it because of that experience.
Once you get a little touch of the mold, then it always comes back to you in your taste buds. Memory.
Yeah, whether it's there or not,
in your
I
memory,
just
yeah.
imagine it.
So wheatgrass isn't something you can do now. It's harder for you to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my story.
You know, and so vegan cooking has evolved.
Oh, totally.
I mean, yeah, the products that they're manufacturing now have evolved as well. Although, there was always plant meats. That's an ancient recipe.
Absolutely.
Right? But some of those now have evolved into the mainstream. But the chefs have really
yes.
evolved. And here's another case where all of these award shows, we talked about them last couple of times I was on your show, are going vegan. Now the Academy Awards, a couple of the balls that they have are going to have some, I don't know if they're completely vegan, but they're going to have...
This is very exciting.
Big time vegan options. And speaking of awards, Joaquin Phoenix, the BAFTAs were on Sunday night. And so if you weren't watching the Super Bowl, like we weren't watching the Super Bowl, maybe you were following the BAFTAs, the British Academy Awards. And Joaquin Phoenix, who's now labeled on a lot of sites, vegan actor Joaquin Phoenix won the Best Actor British Academy Award for his performance in Joker.
He's scooping them all up.
Right. And he, in his acceptance speech, he was praised for calling out systemic racism in the film industry. So the guy, and before the BAFTAs, he went to another protest for animal rights.
Oh.
So he's doing a lot of great things. And we just wanted to point that out as far as our celebrity spotlights. And if you're a tennis fan, and I am a huge tennis fan, vegan athlete Novak Djokovic just won his 8th Australian Open title. And he said going vegan makes him a great tennis player. I'm paraphrasing, but he attributes his vegan lifestyle to winning.
To his athletic performance.
Right, to winning.
It's a game changer.
It truly is. It truly is. Although it didn't get the Tennessee Titans into the Super Bowl, but they went very, very far.
They got close.
They got really close. And so lots of really fun stuff in the news, in the vegan news. And so...
I have a few more things, and we just have a few more minutes left to go. So can I talk about...
Yeah,
so some of you may remember Chef AJ. I had her on the program about a year ago or so.
Sure.
She's really a dynamite person, very charismatic, and has a great story about weight loss. And she put together The Real Truth About Weight Loss last year. And she's promoting the program again from February 8th to the 20th. If you want more information on it, you can go to our website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We have a link to The Real Truth About Weight Loss, or you can Google it yourself and go there directly. The Real Truth About Weight Loss, it has so many plant-based, plant-friendly vegan people. Most of them, I think, have been on this program.
I think you've talked to everybody in the vegan.
I'm looking at all the little pictures, the thumbnails, and there might be a few people I haven't talked to. Dr. Clapper, Dr. Ornish, Rich Roll, everybody's here.
Rich Roll, he's got quite a story.
He does.
Yeah. I really enjoyed his book.
So there's that. And that's February 8th to the 20th. And it's free for a limited time where you could watch and you can listen to everybody. And it's all focused on weight loss. So maybe some of you made a resolution January 1st and here we are, it's February. And are you sticking with it? Maybe you need a little kick, a little more inspiration. This would be a good thing to check out. And I just want to remind you, for those of you who are in the Southern Florida area, or maybe you want to fly there, that the 5th annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Wellness Conference will be the end of March. And I'm speaking there on March 28th with Dr. Pam Popper and Dr. Delaney, who is the founder of this conference, the co-founder of the conference. And that's also on the Responsible Eating and Living website if you want information about that. I would love to meet you. It's going to be really fun.
Yes, it
is.
In
the sun.
And little note about fashion. If you're into fashion and you're wondering when are some of your favorite fashion items going to go vegan, this is all over the news, the fashion news. Stella McCartney and Adidas are going to launch a new vegan Stan Smith tennis shoe. And I don't know about you, but I used to wear Stan Smiths. I was never without a pair of Stan Smiths, and I don't wear them anymore because they're leather. But now I just read that Stella McCartney is joining with, and that's Paul's daughter. She's a fashion.
Paul's daughter.
She's a
Paul's
fashion designer.
Paul's daughter.
Is launching a vegan Stan Smith. So if you're a fan of Stan Smith.
Or if you're saying Stan who?
Yeah. And Balenciaga just launched a vegan leather sneaker. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening. Check out the fashion world. Make sure that you read those labels. Make sure that you know what you're buying is friendly to animals.
Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed, if you've been looking in your shoes to see what they're made of, but they used to say what they were made of inside. But now there are little icons. And if you don't know what the icons mean, just Google shoe label icons and there'll be some diagrams that'll show you what the icons mean. I can't really describe them on an audio program, but there's an icon for leather. There's an icon for textile. There's an icon for man-made.
Right. So check it out. Make sure you know what you're buying. It's difficult sometimes. And if you like Doc Martens, Doc Martin also has a vegan leather Doc Martin. And I think the tag on the back is yellow. as opposed to the other tags.
Yeah, they make it pretty obvious.
But make sure you check that out too. A lot of cool things going on. And if you're in New York and you want some great shoes and you want some great vegan shoes, go see our friends at
Moo Shoes.
And there's a great, and they have a great little market next door to Moo Shoes that sells all kinds of great vegan cheeses. And my favorite cheese is the person who you also interviewed on this show.
Oh, Cheese Hound.
Well, of course, I have a lot of favorite vegan cheeses. But as far as over-the-counter cheese, vegan cheese, Cheese Hound is great. Miyoko's is great. And we make a great cheese, and there's a lot of great cheese recipes at Responsible Eating and Living. So check that out if you like to experiment with making your own cheese.
I think we're out of time again, Gary.
We are?
Yeah.
I'm just going to have to come back next week.
Okay.
All right.
Let's try that out. Anyway, you've been listening to Karen Hartglass and Gary DeMattei on
It's All About Food.
And remember, info@realmeals.org is the email where you can send us comments and questions. info@realmeals.org.
info@realmeals.org.
Visit us at responsibleeatingandliving.com.
Or download the app.
Oh, please, the app. I use it all the time.
The Responsible Eating and Living app.
Okay, everybody. That's it.
Have a delicious week.